Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Nun Aleph Amud Bet. The Mishnah begins, Hanoder mina chalav, mutar bekum. Someone who takes a neder to restrict themselves in chalav, in milk, is permitted to take part in kum. Rabbi Yossi oser. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that's not the case. If he's noder mina chalav, subsumed in that is kum. Mina kum, on the other hand, if he takes a neder from kum, mutar bechalav. He is permitted in chalav. Now, what kum is, most of the Rishonim explain over here. You can see it in Rashi. Mashgeh hainu nisyuvei dechalva. It is the residual of the milk, what's otherwise known as whey. It is after you curdle the milk to make cheese, the water that is left behind from that process of curdling is the kum. That's the way that Rashi explains it. That's the way that the Rosh explains it. Tosafot seems to be saying a similar thing. He says it's mei chalav, it's the water of the chalav. But in each of these cases, it is some sort of residual that comes from the chalav. Again, according to most of these rishonim, it's because you're curdling the milk. It could be from the possibility if they were taking off the cream from the milk and they were taking the milk and the water that was left behind. I mean, that if you let milk stand before it's homogenized and pasteurized, then the milk itself separates from the water. You could argue that maybe that water also is like this mechalav. But again, the focus of the Rishonim here is on the residual water that's left over, the whey that is left over from curdling of the cheese. Now, why this is the case, Rashi says, the kum enu bichlal chalav. Kum is just not called milk. It's not a part of the milk. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi disagrees according to Rashi. The kasavar yesh bo tzichtzuach chalav. There are little residues or residuals of milk in the kum, and therefore it's deemed to be milk. So Rashi says that the argument between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim is about the kum itself. Is the kum milk because there's residue or residual milk inside of the whey? Or is it simply water, and therefore it has no semblance of the milk itself? And then you look in the Tosafot. Tosafot says, Rabbi Yossi sever kum bichlal chalav. Whereas the Chachamim believe that it's not bichlal chalav, the psolet. It is just the residue. It is the leftover. It's the discard or even the discharge from the milk, the whey that comes out when you're making or curdling the cheese. And since it's a psolet, psolet chalav is not called chalav. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says that psolet chalav is considered to be chalav. Daran says, you should look in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to explain it. The Gemara later on will explain that it has to do with the nature, possibly, of the language, which is whether the word chalav subsumes the word kum in it. And that might have to do with how people say the word kum. Do they say kum and it's an independent entity, an independent word? Or is kum always attached to chalav? It's the kum de chalva. It's the kum of the milk. And since it's connected to milk always, it's still considered to be some sort of derivative of milk because of that. And that could be the machloket, and that's the way the Gemara sets up the machloket here between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim in the end. It has to do with the nature of the wording or vocabulary in the different areas. So now you have anoder min chalav mutar bekum. That's the first statement. That's the Chachamim's position. Rabbi Yossi is oser. We just explained three different reasons as to why they might argue over here. Rashi, who says they're arguing about whether there's residue of milk in there. Tosfot, who says they're arguing about whether psolet of something is known to be by the primary item. And the Ran, who's bringing the Gemara, that says that it's an argument about language. Min kum mutar bechalav. On the other hand, if you take a nether from kum, then you are mutar bechalav. Over here, Tosafot brings down two possibilities. One possibility is that it says divrei hakol. Everybody agrees that if you take a neder from kum, that chalav is mutar because the two are not overlapping. I mean, taking a neder from kum has nothing to do with the primary object, milk. Milk is very different than kum. You could talk about a secondary object or a derivative object being subsumed under the primary. So kum could be included under chalav. But the other way around, to say that when you're taking a neder from kum, that chalav is also restricted, that seems strange. And therefore, this is a statement of divrei hakol. That's one approach that Tosafot brings. Other than Tosafot brings a second approach, which is that Rabbi Yossi will disagree in this instance as well. Just like he says, someone who takes a nether from chalav will be asur in kum, so too, someone who takes a nether mikum will also be asur in chalav. The Ran already understands that there might be some difficulty in this approach, because the way that the Ran explained it and the way that Gemara is going to explain it is that when you talk about kum, you talk about kum as being kum de chalva. It is the whey from the milk. And so the word milk is part and parcel of the word kum. And that's why when you take a nether from chalav, you also subsume in that kum. But the other way around doesn't make any sense. Just because you called it kum de chalva, why should that include chalav? So the Ran on Nun Bet Amud Bet actually asks this question. He says, "Vim tomar Rabbi Yosi tinach the noder min chalav asur bekum, if he should dine shem chalav alav, because the kum still has the name of chalav. It's a derivative of the primary source. The kum of the chalva karile ela noder min akum amay asur bechalav. According to this daya that says that Rabbi Yosi argues in both instances, then why, when someone says kum, is chalav included? Ha lo karile chalva the kuma. Everybody calls it, this is the milk of the kum, and that milk is not a part of or a derivative in any way of the kum. The Yesh Lamar came into the Karu the kuma, kuma de chalva. Since they called kum the kum of the milk, havalu chalav v'kum davar echad. It makes them synonymous. It makes these words synonymous in some way. And that's what you're going to have to believe here, according to Rabbi Yossi, is that kum and chalav become interchangeable words in some way, even though obviously they mean different things, but because of their closeness and their shared source, because of that, they become almost interchangeable, and therefore Rabbi Yossi believes, even when you say the word kum, you'd also be asur b'chalav. Now, the Ran states over here something very interesting. He says that it's seemingly, it's a divrei akol over here, that even Rabbi Yossi would agree that it's mutar. When you say kum, that chalav is mutar. But he says that there's a braita on the Gemara that says that Rabbi Yossi argues. We don't have such a braita. Although we do have a braita in the Gemara, that braita is mimics our Mishnah, doesn't show any differentiation, which might indicate that either there was an alternate girsa in the Gemara, and would help to explain why that braita is brought in the Gemara, which seems to mimic our Mishnah entirely, and as if it was unnecessary to bring it. But the Ran claims that there was such a braita, again, we don't have it in our girsa, that showed that Rabbi Yossi argued in both instances, and that's what compelled some of the Rishonim to explain it that way, because otherwise, why would you explain it? You would assume that it was divrei akol. The reason that they're compelled is because it seems there was this braita that showed that Rabbi Yossi also argued. Now, hanuder min agvina, person who restricts himself from cheese, asur ba, restricted in cheese, ben melucha, utfeila. Now, tfeila here with a tuf instead of a tet. You can see that in the Masoret HaShas, because tafel means something that lacks flavor, something that's bland. So melucha would be salty cheese, and the tefillah would be unsalted or plain cheese. So despite the fact that you said hagvina, the Rosh says you use the hey ayidia, the lo tema hagvina hamiyuchedet, since you use hey ayidia, that it refers to the special type of cheese, or cheese, the cheese, which is salted cheese. Don't think that. But rather, hagvina subsumes in it any type of cheese, whether it is salted or whether it is plain. The way that Tosavot says it, he says, "V'afagav delo achle in shelemcha." Even though people only eat salty cheese, they do not eat plain cheese. Nevertheless, gvina subsumes both of the items. And the Ran, similar to Tosavot, says it a little differently. He says, "Mipnei shrova gvinot meluchotein." Majority of cheese is salty cheese. So you would have assumed when he says gvina that it includes those salty cheeses, because that's what the rov is. In the end, what the Mishnah is telling us is the word gvina is used to describe both types of cheese. And since that's the case, when a person says gvina, he excludes both types of cheese, whether it's salty cheese or if it's plain cheese. Now, anoder min basar, mutar, berotev, ubikipa. Person who takes a nether from meat is permitted to partake of the rotev. Rotev is easier to understand here. Rotev is the gravy. It's the liquid that comes from the cooking of the meat. Ubikipa. Kippah, there's a machloket in the Rishonim here as to what kippah is. If you look in the Ran says kippah is hainu dak dak shel basar shored l'shulei akdera. It's the little pieces of meat that separate away from the larger piece and sink to the bottom of the pot. So that's what is considered to be the kippah. So according to the Ran, it's really small or minuscule pieces of meat that comes from the softening of the meat that peels away. There's these little shreds or strings of meat that settle at the bottom of the pot. If you look in Rashi, Rashi says that the kippah is makpeh aveh mitavlin. It is this type of sauce, gravy, that is thick, that's made out of the spices. So as opposed to the rotev, which is this liquid gravy, this is much more of a solidified type of gravy, which comes from all the spices that are there, or the flavors that are put into the meat. According to some, even maybe it's even coagulated gravy. If you look in the Rosh combines both the Ran and Rashi's explanation, which is, Hanu dak dak basar v'rotev hanikpeh b'shuleak deira. It's the mixture of the pieces of meat and the gravy that is hardened at the base of the pot made out of the tavlin as well as these pieces of meat. There you have three different approaches. The Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot actually goes with a much simpler explanation and says that rotev hi amarak, rotev is the gravy or is the liquid that's there, kippah hu atavlin, and the kippah is just the spices. So you have another alternate explanation of what the kippah is. But based on the position of the Tanakhama, the Chachamim here, person who takes a nether from basar means meat and doesn't mean these other items that are derivatives of the meat, like the gravy and like the kippah, they're not included in his nether. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Oser. Rabbi Yehuda says it's asur. The Ran connects between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and says that they are of the same shita, that the argument that Rabbi Yehuda has on the Tanakhama here, or the Chachamim, is the same machloka that Rabbi Yossi has with the Chachamim as well, as to whether these items are subsumed under the broader word or not subsumed under the broader word. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Maseh, we had an incident, Va'asar alai Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon was oser for me, Beitzim shenit bashlu imo. Eggs that were cooked together with the meat, he did not let me partake of that egg, and I had only taken a nether from basar. So you see here that things that are flavored by the meat or derivatives of the meat, they are also asurim. And he says, I have evidence of that from the fact that Rabbi Tarfon Paskin this way for me. So Amrulo, so the Chachamim respond to him and say, Ken Adavar, you're absolutely right. But you made a mistake in your understanding of Rabbi Tarfon's psak. Eimatai, when is that true? Bizman Shumar Basar Ze Alai. It's in a case where he specifies the basar. He says what the piece of meat is that he's making asur. Shanoder min Adavar. Because a person who takes a nether about a particular object, v'nitarev b'acher, and then it gets mixed up with other items, im yesh bo benotein tam, it has the ability to flavor the other items, asur. And if it doesn't have the ability to flavor the other items, then it is mutar. So what the Chachamim say is it makes a difference in how one takes the nether. If you look in the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot, he describes the difference between them. Which is, he says, Shadam nishbal davar yadua. The person takes a nether on a particular item. Umifaresh oto. And he delineates specifically what the item is. Umiachdo. Rehu alav, kama davar asur miatzmo. It becomes to him like a chatitcha shel isura. It becomes like a piece of isur. It becomes like chazer, like non-kosher, anything like that. That's the same thing here. Ugmisharim oto. And then we grade it, or we deal with it the same way that we would deal with anything else, when it's mitarev, with something else. If it's mixed up with something else, then the din is benotein tam, like any other isur. And if it's min bimino, then it would be bekoshu. So that would be the din over here. Aval. On the other hand, im nishbal min minaminim, if a person takes a nether about a particular type of item, not the item itself, but a type, then enu asur alav elo oto amin. Then you're only restricted in that item. Be'atzmo, it itself. But ubeino, by itself, without anything attached to it. Bilti, tarovet, zulato, nothing to do with mixtures or flavors or anything like that. So what the Chachamim say is there's a difference between saying basar alai, that basar is restricted, and in that case, you're just restricted in basar. On the other hand, if you say basar ze alai, if you point to the specific object of basar that you're trying to be oser, that becomes like a chatichashel isura. And once you've made something into a chatichashel isura, then it takes on the properties of isur, and therefore can convey flavor, notein tam, it can have tarovet, it has the same dimim as anything that is tmeya, not kosher, chazer, all these things that are of isur, it has the same properties. Broader his nether is, the less likely it is to be a chatichashel isura. So if he says basar, and that's the generic or generally the basar, then that would restrict all basar. It has the broad context of saying basar, but on the other hand, it doesn't have the derivative effect, which is that only basar is asur. Anything that's flavored by it, any derivative of it would not be asur. And then if he says basar zeh, and he specifies the object itself, then he's limiting the nether to the object itself, but that object now has a greater level of isur, becomes like a chaticha shel isura, and therefore derivatives or things flavored by it will be impacted by it. So, number one, there are two things here that are important. One is minyan diyoma, since we're talking about this anyway. It happens to be that we're coming into the 9 days, and during the 9 days, there's an isur of basar, and eating basar based on the minhag of the Ashkenazim, Shvosh Chalbo by the minhag of the Sfaradim. So based on that minhag, people do not eat meat during this period of time. What happens to items that were cooked together with meat or things that were cooked in a plishik pot? So it turns out the halacha, the Mishnah Berurah brings down, that things that are cooked together with basar or have any flavor of basar in them are also restricted during the 9 days. Not only is basar restricted, but also basar of would be subsumed also in this restriction. And anything flavored by basar, anything that has no tingtam of basar, would be problematic during the 9 days. Now then, something cooked in a meat pot that only has a residual type of no tingtam of the basar, and it's not a strong tam of the basar, then in that instance, we would generally say that it's not problematic during the 9 days. That's one thing. It's also something that is true halachically, similar to what it said over here, that the basar's ability to affect other items, even though it's not basar itself. Because the minhag makes it into chaticha shel isura. Number two is a question that's raised by the Tosafot that is a very serious issue and creates the discussion in this very large ran over here. Tosafot asks a question. He says, V'im tomar, if you will say over here, I don't understand this Mishnah. This Mishnah says that if the basar has no taintam to it, then it's asur, implying that if it was not no taintam, it would be mutar. That this basar, which is a chaticha shel isura, if that meat gets mixed up with something else and it's not no taintam, it'd be mutar. And Tosfot says, how can you say that? Because nidarim havidavar sheish lo matirim. Nidarim are something that can be mutar in the end, and we know from the Gemara and other places, in Beitza and other locations, the Gemara davar sheish lo matirim. Is enu batel afilu be'elef. It's not batel, even at 1,000 times to 1, it's not batel. Davar sheyesh lo matirim is something that doesn't have properties that allow it to become batel. And based on that, it would be the same thing over here. A neder is davar sheyesh lo matirim, because a person can be matir the neder. If it's a davar sheyesh lo matirim, then it should not be able to be batel, and it should be irrespective of whether it's no taintam or not no taintam. That is the question that Tosafot poses. And then he says, V'yesh lomar, Dum chomer davar sheyesh lomaterim, Eino loheg elu b'min b'mino. Tosafot here makes a distinction that is important, and he says that davar sheyesh lomaterim is only relevant b'min b'mino. Aval b'min she'eino mino, when it comes to something that has different properties, afilu yesh lomaterim batel b'shishim. Even if it's a davar sheyesh lomaterim, it's batel 60 to 1. And you can look in the Ran. The Ran brings down different cases and shas that show that and support that idea, that the limitation of a davar sheyesh lo matirim is only by min b'mino. But min she'eino mino, davar sheyesh lo matirim is also batel benotin tam or batel bishishim. That is what Tosafot says. Now what Tosafot says is not so simple. The Ran here quotes the Yerushalmi in support of this shita within the Tosafot. The Yerushalmi here on this Mishnah asks the question about whether nedarim are davar sheyesh lo matirim. The Rishonim's assumption is that that is the case, based on the fact that we favor people being matir their neder rather than keeping their neder. We saw that back on Daf Kof Aleph, and later on Rabbi Natan also, we saw the statement of Rabbi Natan that better to be matir your neder than to keep your neder and to uphold the neder. So since hatarat nedarim is the preferred outcome over here, therefore, we believe that it's a davar sheyesh lo matirim, because that's going to be the end result. We're going to ask you to be matir the nether. We're going to push you towards being matir the nether. And that's why it's considered to be a davar sheyesh lo matirim. Now, again, Yerushalmi says that, but there is an alternate day in Yerushalmi who disagrees and says that it's not considered to be a davar sheyesh lo matirim. Again, the Yerushalmi seems to favor the side that's Dabar Sheish L'Matirim, and all the Rishonim say it here. On the other hand, the Rambam seems to think that Nedarim are not a Dabar Sheish L'Matirim, and for a very good reason. It's very different than normal Dabar Sheish L'Matirim. In a normal case, the Dabar Sheish L'Matirim, it's simply an expiry. Whenever the time period elapses, the item goes from being Asur to being Mutar. On the other hand, over here, when you're talking about Dabar Sheish L'Matirim, someone has to intervene and take action. You have to have a maaseh to change it from Isur to Heter. That's a very different type of Dabar Sheish L'Matirim than a standard case where it's Asur and Shabbat. So when Shabbat passes, it becomes Mutar. So because of that, the Rambam favors, or seems to favor, the opinion that the Nedarim are not considered to be a Dabar Sheish L'Matirim. So what Tosafot takes for granted, and again, the Yerushalmi seems to support this view, and many of the Rishonim support this view, that it's a Dabar Sheish L'Matirim. That's what the premise of his whole question is, because it's a Dabar Sheish L'Matirim. But that premise can be challenged, and maybe they are not Dabar Sheish L'Matirim. But taking the assumption that it is a Dabar Sheish L'Matirim, then why does it work over here to be Batel? So Tosafot over here is Mechalek between Min B'mino and Min She'enu Mino. When we say Dabar Sheish L'Matirim is Enu batel be'elef, afilu be'elef, that's talking about min b'mino. But min she'enu mino, then it is Dabar Sheish L'Matirim is batel b'shishim or benotin tam, and that's the case of our Mishnah. That leads to a very big problem with the psak of the Rif, and that the Ran quotes over here, and all the Rishonim, because of this, reject the Rif's psak. It says, Lefika chikshu al Rav Alfas Zal, that all the Rishonim ask on the Rif, that if you bake bread inside of a oven, the same oven as meat that you are roasting, the maidamrinim dasur achla b'kutach, that you're not allowed to eat it together with the kutach, which is a milchik spread, apokav the kaimelan derechalav milti, even though we believe that the transference of flavor through the air is not a problem, and therefore you can cook in the same oven meat that is uncovered, and you can cook the bread in the oven, and the bread will remain not fleshik. Hainu taima, what's the reason that we say that you shouldn't do this? Yishum davi dover sheish lo matirim. The bread is a dover sheish lo matirim. Damatzi michlo b'hadei bisra. Because you can eat the bread together with meat instead of with milk. Yishum hachi afilu ba'elef lo batil. Therefore, even when 1,000 times it's not batel. What's the problem with the Rif? The problem with the Rif is that you're dealing with min she'enu mino. You're dealing with bread that is taking flavor from the meat. That's min she'enu mino. And the bread should be mevatel the flavor of the meat, because reichalav miltahi, or it's not significant enough. And therefore, if you don't taste the meat in the bread should be considered to be parva. It should have no effect from the meat. Yet, the Rif over here invokes the principle that if it's dover sheish l'matirim, afilu be'elef lo batil. So because of that, all the Rishonim reject this Rif and say the Rif is wrong. His halacha is wrong because we, based on our Mishnah here, established that when you have min she'enu mino, that even dover sheish l'matirim has the ability to become batel. And the same will be true over there. In the case of the bread inside of the oven together with the meat, that it's min she'enu mino, and therefore it should be batel be'notein tam. So now, the Ran comes to defense of the Rif and says that the Rif's halacha is right. And then the Ran here is mechadesh two things, one about tarovet in general and one about dover sheish lo matirim. And this is a very famous Ran. It's worth, that's why I'm spending time on it, because it's a famous Ran that's quoted all over Shas and has impact halacha in many different places. The Ran says that the way that tarovet works, or why things are batel, is because of the nature of contrast. Items can be mevatel each other when they contrast with each other. If items are similar, they cannot be mevatel each other. That's the first premise of the Ran, that only items that are contrasting can be mevatel each other. Things that are similar will not be mevatel each other. The second question that you have to address is, what determines what is contrast? So there we have a machloke between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda believes that contrast has to do with the food itself, the underlying item that's there. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda believes min b'mino enu batel. When you have two pieces of meat, they are not batel because they are of the same type. They're the same food that you're talking about, same chemical properties, same item that's there. They're not batel each other because there's no contrast. And the primary item that we're looking at is the food itself. And if we look at the properties of the food, if the properties of the food are similar, they will not be batel each other. If they are different, contrasting, then they will be batel each other. The other hand, the Chachamim disagree, and they say that the din by min b'mino and min she'enu mino is the same when you're talking about the properties of the food. What creates the contrast for the Chachamim is the halachic reality, which is if meat is asur and meat is mutar, then the mutar meat can be mevatel the asur meat. But if you have two pieces of meat that are both either asurim or both heter, they're not going to be mevatel each other. So in order to have bitul, according to the Chachamim, you have to have contrasting items. Contrasting items means that you have isur versus heter. And if you have isur versus heter, the heter can come along and be mevatel the isur. That's the first chiddush of the Ran, that bitul works in this concept or this way of contrasting items. And the machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is about what is the focus of the contrast. Rabbi Yehuda says the focus is on the properties of the food. And the Chachamim say the focus is on the halachic properties of the item. Now we move over to Davar Sheish Lo Matirim. When it comes to a Davar Sheish Lo Matirim, that is not fully sore. It has a touch of heter in it because right now it's a sore, but eventually it will become mutar. So based on that, it lowers its contrast factor. As opposed to really sore versus real heter, over there, heter can work on the sore because the isur is a full-fledged isur, and the heter is full-fledged heter, there's real contrast, and then therefore the heter can be mevatel the isur. On the other hand, when you lower the threshold of isur here, because this is davar sheish lo matirim, in the end it will become mutar, so because of that, it's a lower contrast to heter. Since it's a lower contrast to heter, heter itself cannot override the item. But, with the addition of the food properties, over here the Chachamim say that we will allow it to be mevatel. That means that if you take min b'mino together with davar sheish lo matirim, then it doesn't work. Because min b'mino, you have no contrast in the food properties. And you don't have a sufficient contrast in the halachic properties because you have heter. And then you have isur that's going to turn into heter. So because of that, einu batel afilu b'elef. On the other hand, if you have min shebe'enu mino, if you have two items that have different food properties, over here together, the tziruf together of the fact that these have somewhat different halachic properties, one is heter gamur, one is an isur that will turn into heter, so they have a contrast, that can be compensated, the lack of isur, and that it can be compensated through the difference in the food properties. And therefore, if the items are different items, it's min she'enu mino, that will suffice, according to the Chachamim, in order to allow it to bitul to take place. And that's what Tosafot explained about our Mishnah, and the Ran agrees to, and many of the Rishonim agree, that when you have min she'enu mino, then even with davar sheish lo matirim, it's batel according to the Chachamim. And again, the way that the Ran describes this is because of the tziruf, the joining of the min ve'enu mino, plus the somewhat contrast between heter and isur that will turn into heter, those together can create enough contrast to allow for the bitul. On the other hand, what the Ran explains is that the case of the rif is a very different case. The case of the rif is not davar sheish lo matirim because it's asur now and it will become mutar in the future. Why is the bread there considered to be a davar sheish lo matirim? Considered to be a davar sheish lo matirim is because the bread, which is quote-unquote fleishik, which is meat, can be eaten with meat right then. We don't want you eating with milk because you could eat it with meat right then. That's not your classic type of davar sheish lo matirim. Classic type of davar sheish lo matirim is something that's asur the gamre now, and it will become heter the gamur later on. Over here, that davar sheish lo matirim is very different. It's heter gamur right now. It has aspects of it which are asur, but it also has opportunities to eat it and utilize it now where it's heter gamur. And what the Ran says, based on his shita about contrasts, that's not enough of a contrast to create bitul. Because this davar sheish lo matirim is not even asur right now. It's mostly heter. It's so similar to regular heter that the two are not contrasting enough in order to allow for bitul. What about if you add on min she'enu mino? That's not enough to compensate over here. Min she'enu mino can compensate when there's a small differential between the contrasting of the heter versus something that's isur that'll become heter later on. So there's a small deficit because it'll become heter later on in the contrast. So that'll be filled in or compensated for by the difference in the nature of the food ingredients. On the other hand here, where you're talking about heter gamur and something else that's heter gamur. The bread itself is heter gamur if you eat it with meat. If you eat it with milk, then it's problematic. But if you eat it with meat, it's heter gamur. They're so similar. It's almost like min b'mino that it'll be difficult to have them be mivatel each other. And even if you add on top of that the contrast of the food ingredients or the food properties, That's not enough because you're trying to compensate for too big a deficit over here, and therefore it doesn't work. And based on that, the Ran believes that the Rif is right in its Psak Halacha because Min Sheinu we know can't compensate in a case where you're dealing with Heter and Heter, even though the Heter has some aspects of Isur with it. On the other hand, when you're talking about Isur that will turn it to Heter, there Min Sheinu we know can compensate for it. That is the huge Chiddush that the Ran has in this Sugya. Now that is a big Chiddush because a lot of the Rishonim, like Rashi, in many places in Shas, says the reason that Davar Sheishlo Matirim is Asur, or it's not even Batel Be'elef, is because of, why not just wait? If you can eat it now through Bittel, or you can eat it later on through Heter, why not just wait and eat it Be'heter? So that's a classic view of why Davar Sheishlo Matirim is considered to be problematic, is because if you just wait, you'll end up with something that's Heter, so why bother with Bittel when you can get there and eat it plain with Heter without any problems whatsoever? The Ran, on the other hand, views that Davar Sheishlo Matirin is a problem in the nature of the Bittul. It's inherently problematic. The Bittul itself is inherently problematic, and that's why it's not Batel. Not because it's better to wait, but because there's an inherent problem in the ability of this Tarovet to actually go through the process of Bittul, because there's not enough contrast here. So now, that has actually a big nafkamina in the way that they view Bittul. It's very possible that their views of Bittul are different. We've discussed this many times. It's brought down in the Shulchan Aruch as well. The Ramal brings two opinions about this. But regards to Bittul, when we look at Bittul, how does Bittul work? Does Bittul work because it changes reality? Which means that if I have two pieces of Heter and one piece of Isur, the Rove is Heter now. So now all three pieces become Heter, and they become Heter Gamur. That's one way to look at Bittul. Or the other way to look at Bittul is, I need a hachra'ah. I need a halachic psak over here. So I'll invoke Bittul to give me the answer. That doesn't change the reality here that in these three pieces, one of them is asur. But if I look at each piece in this group, each piece that I take from this group was most likely from the rove. And since it's from the rove, it should be mutar. The nafkamina between those two views is brought in the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch discusses this, whether you have to throw out one piece. Can you eat all three pieces? Or can you eat two out of the three pieces? Because if you eat the third piece, then by definition, you're eating the Isur. If you think Bittul changes the reality, then you can eat all three pieces without even worrying about it. If Bittul is just a way to get to Hachra, to get to a halachic decision, then all that means is that if I take two of the pieces, I can assume each one of those two pieces is Heter. The third piece I can't eat, because then I've lost that Hachra, because the third piece is really Isur, or what we're assuming to be the Isur. Therefore, you'd have to leave over the third piece. The same thing will be true with regards to Davar Sheishlo Matirim. Rashi says that I'm better off waiting for Heter when there is Isur involved. That means that Rashi sees Bittul as not functioning to change the reality here, but Bittul is just a mechanism for dealing with the situation. So if I have a mechanism that deals with the situation through Bittul, or I can avoid Bittul and just take it Heter, Rashi says wait and take it Heter. Because he says Bittul as just being a mechanism for Hachra'ah, not a change in the reality. And because of that, if I have an option, a different option, just by waiting to make it all Heter, that's a much better outcome than using the Hachra'ah of Rov to get rid of this problem of Isur. On the other hand, it seems from the Ran thinks that Bittul would work fine. Bittul would function to change the reality, and Bittul would completely eliminate any problem here. So the issue is not, if I wait, it'll be Heter. That doesn't change anything. It has to do with the here and now. For the Ran, it's all a question, does Bittul function now or does Bittul not function now? And that's what the Ran says. Davar Sheishlo Matirin doesn't function within the world of Bittul because there's not enough contrast. And because of that, it fails in Bittul. But if it worked, if Bittul worked, then we'd say, go ahead, eat it. We wouldn't say wait for the Heter because it would be enough in the Bittul itself to eliminate it. So that is actually a big nafkamina between the Rashi's view and the Ran's view of Davar Sheishlo Matirin, as to whether we ask you to wait or we don't ask you to wait for the Heter. According to the Ran, there's no reason to wait for the Heter. It's all about the moment that the Bittul is happening. Is it strong enough to create Bittul? Is it not strong enough to create Bittul? That's the only question you have to ask. And for Rashi, you have to ask, this is a mechanism for determination. Is there a better mechanism? Maybe waiting is the better mechanism. Maybe we should wait to get to the Heter. That's a big nafkamina between the Shitot. But it's also this explanation here that the Ran gives, that Bittul works through contrast. Also has other interesting nafkaminot in determining certain things, why they are asur, or why they create different natures of isur, that comes up in Basar B'Chalav as well. Rabbeinu Tam in many places in Shas and Avodah Zarah talks about the fact that basar by itself and chalav by itself are heter. And therefore, when you bring them together, that's why there's no bittul of basar b'chalav. When you mix basar b'chalav together, they become a new entity called basar b'chalav because they're both heter. And since they're both heter, like the Ran says over here, there's not enough contrast over there to create bittul because each one independently is heter. It's only when they're joined together do they become isur. So it has implications for Shas, but this is a very famous, important Ran in the world of Tarovet. I wanted to spend a little time on it explaining the shita of the Ran. Right now, the Mishnah continues and says, it's a neder min hayayin. Someone takes a neder from wine, mutar b'tavshil sheish bo tam yayin. Then a person is mutar to eat a dish that has wine in it, or wine flavor in it. Because when he says that a masur b'yayin, he means yayin. He means wine itself. He means from drinking plain wine. He doesn't mean anything that has wine in it. He simply means wine itself. On the other hand, if he says, Amar konam yayin ze alai, or konam yayin ze sha'eni to aim, if he says that, then he makes it into a chaticha shel isura, that wine itself, v'nafala tavshil, if that wine then goes into a dish, yesh bo notin tam, are ze asur. Then it has the same rules, like the basar that we saw before. If you made the basar into a chaticha shel isura by saying basar ze, so too by yayin ze, you have the same impact. And make it into something of the isur, and therefore it'll impact on the tafshil itself, but no tain tam. So the difference between yayin and tam yayin is the same thing that we saw, the distinction between basar and basar zeh. The same is true by yayin and yayin zeh. Why both examples are brought, you can't take anything for granted here in this, in these mishnayot, because this is all about lashon b'nei adam. So here the Mishnayot are telling you, when you use the word basar, use the word yayin, this is what people mean by basar v'yayin. That's number one. The other distinction, the other important thing is the phraseology that's used here. By basar, it says basar zeh alai. Over here, it says konam, yayin, and here there's a machloket about the girsa. If you look in the Balei HaTosafot, the Balei HaTosafot say konum yayin zeh. They have a girsa of zeh. On the other hand, the Ran is actually found on the Amud Bet. His girsa in Agamara is koyim yain she'eni toim or she'eni toim. So the machloket here is the language that you used, and therefore, according to the Ran, there's actually a difference in the way that you phrased it. In the first case, you said basar ze'alai, and the second same, you said koyim yain she'eni toim. And what the Mishnah then is teaching you is that both lishanot work to specify the object, and if that's the case, it becomes a chaticha shel isura. But that's done through different language than according to the Ran. And that might be the Chiddush of the Mishnah here, if that it's giving you an example with the Lashon of Zeh. And then it gives you an example of Lashon of She'eni or She'ani Toim. So that might be the difference between Yain and Basar and why the Mishnah gave you both examples. All right, now the Gemara says, Viraminu, can we really say that this is the case, that Rabbi Yossi's position is this way? Don't we have a Mishnah later on in the Masechta coming up at the end of this parak? Which, min ha-adashim, asur ba-ashishim. Someone takes a nether from adashim, from lentils, is asur and ashishim. Ve, Rabbi Yossi matir. Rabbi Yossi says, no problem. So now, the Rishonim here argue. Most of the Rishonim believe that this is a dual question. The question is posed both to Rabbi Yossi and to the Chachamim. Because the Chachamim over there say, min ha-adashim, asur ba-ashishim. Whereas in our Mishnah, when they say min ha-chalav is mutar b'kum. So how come over there, ashishim are subsumed under adashim? Whereas over here, in our Mishnah, that kum is not subsumed under chalav. And the same is true for Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah says that kum is subsumed under chalav. And then over here, he says that ashishim are not subsumed under adashim. So most of the Rishonim view this as a two-way question, which is the questions on both the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi. And therefore, the answer of the Gemara applies to both of their positions. That means that the way that Gemara answers is that the machloket isn't so fundamental, but rather about the nature of the vernacular. Now, what ashishim are is subject to a machloket. The Ran quotes the Yerushalmi, who says that ashishim are lentils that were fried or put together with honey, and it's adashim coated in honey. That's one possibility as to what these ashishim are. Rashi says that it's bread that shmu'ura bo kemach shel adashim. It's bread that has not only wheat flour or barley flour in it, it also has lentil flour mixed into it. That's Rashi's definition of what ashishim are. The Rosh says that Ashishim are the psolet of the Adashim. They are the residue or the residual of the lentils. That's what the Rosh says it is. And the Rambam in Perush HaMishnayot says that Ashishim are Kemach Adashim. That's just lentil flour. So here are different definitions of what these items are. Based on that, all of them have some sort of semblance or connection to Adashim. The question is, does Ashishim subsumed under Adashim? And Chachamim say it is. And Rabbi Yossi says it's not, which seems to contradict their opinions in our Mishnah about Kum and Chalav. It says, Lo Kasho. My answer is, Marki Atrei or Marki Atrei. Each one of them was based on where they lived. It's all about vernacular. It's all about language usage, vocabulary, and what the words mean. Ba'atru d'Rabbonon. In the city of the Rabbanon, Karu l'Chalva Chalva. They call milk milk. Ulukuma kuma. And they call the way, way. Ba'atru d'Rabbi Yossi. In the city of Rabbi Yossi, they call the kuma nami karule kuma de chalva. When they speak about whey, they call it the kuma of the milk. So they still connect it to its primary source, which is the milk, and that's what creates the problem over here. Now, according to the Ran, the whole question was only on Rabbi Yossi. And here the Gemara answer is Rabbi Yossi is the steerer within the sheet of Rabbi Yossi by saying that there's a difference. In the case of kuma, kuma is known as kuma de chalva. On the other hand, when it comes to Ashishim, they're not known as the Ashishim, the Adashim. They're just known as Ashishim plain. And because of the difference in the usage of the language, that's why they end up with a different Psak Halacha in the Mishnah upcoming on Nun Gimel Amud Bet versus the Mishnah that we saw over here in Rabbi Yossi Shita. That's the way that the Ran explains it over here. On the other hand, the other Rishonim explain that the question is both on Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim. So then they go on to explain why the Chachamim's position is also different for the same reason. Which, if you look in the Rosh, she gives you, Ba'atru d'Rabbonon, Karol Ashishim, Ashishim d'Adashim. In the city of the Rabbonon, they called Ashishim, Adashim, Ashishim of the Adashim. The same way that in Rabbi Yossi's city, they called Kuma, Kuma d'Chalva, the same is true by the Chachamim. Then Inami, he brings a secondary answer, which is, the Rabbonon, the Psolet, Nikra Hashem Ha'ikar, or Rabbi Yossi Lo. According to the Chachamim, then psolet, residue or leftovers, the unwanted parts of an item, are connected to the original item. Ashishim, according to that, we said that the Rosh suggested maybe it's the psolet of the Adashim, that is considered to be connected to Adashim because it's psolet of Adashim. And something that's psolet of the primary object still has the name of the primary object on it. And Rabbi Yossi disagrees with that. And says that that's not the case over here. Versus our Mishnah beforehand, which has nothing to do with psolet or not psolet, but has to do with whether kuma is known or connected to the chalva or not, or is it so independent and it's so far from the milk that it's not considered to be milk at all. That's how the Rosh and other of the Rishonim will differentiate here between what Rabbi Yossi says and what the Chachamim say. And that's simply what the Ran says. The reason why this is not even a question of the Chachamim to start with is for that difference. Because by Kuma, that's not considered to be milk at all. On the other hand, by Ashishim, since he's using the definition of the Yerushalmi, that is lentils coated in honey, then they are in lentils. They really are lentils. And since they really are lentils, that's why the Chachamim say they're Asur. And that's how the Ran differentiates in the position of the Chachamim without even getting to the question of the Gemara. But that means that according to most of the Rishonim, the machlok between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim is simply about language and language usage. It's about vernacular. And so it's not really a fundamental machlok. It is simply a machlok of the mitziyut of how people use these words. And then according to the Ran, there still is a fundamental machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi about how derivative items relate to their origins. So by the way, it has nothing to do with the original chalav because it's so distant from it. So over there, it's a vernacular argument, and that's why Rabbi Yossi has to distinguish in that manner. But for the Chachamim, you can have a fundamental difference, which is when items include adashim, lentils, which are the original item, even though they're not called lentils anymore, but there are lentils in them, that's enough to be subsumed under the title of lentils. Now then whey, which is not milk at all, over there we would not consider it to be derivative of the primary item unless the vernacular would force you in that direction. So according to the Ran, you could come up with a much more of a fundamental difference within the position of the Chachamim versus the other Rishonim here who say that it's all about language and language usage. Now, the Gemara brings down a Braita, which I mentioned before, Tanya, brings down a Braita, It's not clear why the Gemara brings the Braita. It just is, in a sense, a repetition of the Mishnah. Again, according to the Ran and other Rishonim who say that there was an alternate Girsa in this Braita that said that Rabbi Yossi argued in Kum and Chalav in both directions, then it would make sense that this Braita is here. According to what we saw before, where the Gemara tends to quote the Mishnah again, and it seems like the Mishnah was doubled up, this might be the same thing here, where they were quoting the Mishnah again, but here they quote it as a Braita. I'll read through the Braita, but it's very similar to our Mishnah. Tanya, Noder min ha-chalav mutar b'kum. Min ha-kum mutar b'chalav. Min ha-chalav mutar b'gvina. Min ha-gvina mutar b'chalav. So all of these items do not include each other. This is the sheet of the Chachamim. The chalav does not include kum. Kum does not include chalav. Milk does not include cheese. Cheese does not include milk. Min ha-rotev mutar b'kipa. Person who talks about gravy is not aser in the kippah. I mean, a kippah mutar berotev. Kippah, like we described before, the pieces of meat, or it's the solidified gravy, does not include rotev. Im amar basar ze alai asur bo, ubi rotvo, ubi kippo. He says basar ze makes into a chaticha shel isura, then he's asur in it, it's gravy, and it's pieces of meat at the bottom, because all of those are derivatives of it, and it's a chaticha shel isura, and any tam that it gives off is problematic. Someone who takes a neder from yayin, mutar b'tavshil sheish bo tam yayin. It's mutar to eat something or a cooked dish that has flavor or wine flavor in it. Amar konam yayin ze she'eni to'em. And here you see a mixture of the girsaot, because it has ze and eni to'em in it. So it's both the girsa of the Tosafot and the Ran. If he says it that way, v'nafalo tocha tavshil, and then it falls into the cooked item, sheish bo tam yayin, or is asur. If it has the flavor of wine, then that is considered to be asur. Right, so this bright is very similar to our Mishnah. It has some slight nuances, like talking about rotev versus kippah and chalav versus gvina, but in essence, it's the shita of the chachamim that are found in our Mishnah. Now, the next Mishnah says, "Anoder min anavim mutar b'yayin." Someone who takes a nether from grapes is mutar in wine. Min hazeitim mutar b'shemen. Someone takes a nether from olives is mutar in the oil, because when someone speaks about grapes, they speak literally about grapes. They don't mean derivatives of the grapes. They don't talk about wine, because wine is significant in and of itself. And therefore, when a person speaks about grapes, he doesn't mean wine. He would have said wine if he meant wine. Or he would have said ayotze min anavim, something that is a derivative or comes out of the grapes. And the same is true by zeitim. Since each item is significant in and of itself, and the liquid that emits from it is also significant, they are separate items. Amar konam zeitim v'anavim eilu, if he is oser these particular grapes or olives, she'eni to'aim, that it will not taste of them, asur ben, ube yotze ben, then you're asur in them, and anything that it derives from them or emits from them. So then the wine and the oil will also be asurim, because now you made them into chaticha shel isura, and therefore any derivative from them will also be problematic in that case. Now, by Rami Barchama, elu dafka, o she'eni to'aim dafka. This is basically the machloket and the girsa between the Tosafot and the Ran before, which is, which one or which language over here is dafka? Is it elu is what drives the difference between the resha and the seifa of this Mishnah? Or is it she'eni to'aim that drives the difference between the resha and the seifa? There are Rishonim, like the Rosh over here, who says that there's a third possibility, that it's both. It's both she'eni to'aim and elu. That's a third possibility. There's a different permutation that you need either elu or she'eni to'aim, or maybe you need both. So that's the question of Rami Barchama. What is generating this chaticha shel isura in the Mishnah? The Gemara says, Isaka datcha elu dafka. If you think elu is for real, and that's the thing that's making the difference, she'enu to'aim lomali. Then why does the Mishnah mention she'enu to'aim at all? Hakamashvalan, dafa gav damar she'eni to'aim, because the Mishnah is teaching you that even if you say eni to'aim, idamar elu mitzar, if you use the language of elu, then it's asur. V'lolo, but if you don't use the language of Elu, it doesn't work. Now, most of the Rishonim say that the Gemara just picked this as the example because it was the first one mentioned by Rami Barchama. But the same would be true. The Gemara could ask the same question about Eni To'aim. Let's say Eni To'aim is Dafka. And then, why is Elu mentioned? To show you that even when Elu is mentioned, you still need Eni To'aim. So most of the Rishonim seen them as interchangeable here, not saying that the Gemara is favoring one of the two options, but rather giving you an example of how it would work, even though it used both languages over here. Obviously, according to the Rosh, who brings that opinion that it could be both, then also that's another option over here, that they're both dafka, and that you need both of them. And that's why they're written over here, so that could be another possibility the Gemara introduces. There are others suggest that the Gemara favored Elu because that is the direction that the Gemara is going. It thinks that Elu is this way, and we're going to see later on in the Gemara that that's Pshita, and therefore the Gemara is trying to deal with Elu because that they know for sure is going to create the difference between the Reish and the Seifa. Amarava, Tashma. Let's bring a proof from this. Konam. And we had this back on Mem Zayin Amid Aleph. It's a Mishnah coming up on Nun Zayin because we had this with regards to Chilufehem and Gidulehem. Konam perot ha'elu alai, konam heim lepi, asur b'chilufehem u'b'gidulehem. So you see from here, he used ha'elu, perot ha'elu, which would be the same thing as our Mishnah that says, zeitim banim elu. And over there in that Mishnah, it says, chilufehem and gidulehem are asurim. Ha, you can infer from that, that b'yotzebehem is mutar. That which derives from them is mutar. Because there would have been a bigger chiddush to tell us that the yotzebehem is asur. And then we would have known that certainly gidulehem are asurim. So because when you're talking about a yotze behem, that's a different item. That's something that's separate or different or distinct from the item itself. Gidulehem is something that grows out of the isur itself. So it would have been a much bigger chiddush to teach us about yotze behem than to teach us about gidulehem. The fact that it leaves it out shows you that yotze behem must be mutar. But it says, no. Hu adin dafilu biyotze behem asur. Even yotze behem is asur. So then why didn't the Mishnah mention it? That is because the Mishnah over there wants to teach us the Chiddush that Chilufehen has the same din as Gidulim. Now that's a bigger Chiddush. Chilufim are a bigger Chiddush than Yotzei Behen because Chilufin is an exchange. None of the physical properties of the original Isur are there anymore. You're just exchanging it, and therefore that would be something that you wouldn't think is a Sur. Now you could ask, why isn't it just right then? Chilufin and Yotzei Behen, because those would be the two bigger chidushim. So the Rosh suggests that those two are similar, that chilufim are similar to gidulim, and that's why he kept them together. So chilim gidulim dummy. Now, the Ran over here asks a question, and Tosafot asks the same question. He says, I don't understand the whole question of the Gemara over here, because im tomar, sinu lemeimar, the shiny toim, chamor mikoneim elu. How could you ever suggest that any toim is more chamor than elu? The Mishnah later on, that Mishnah Nun Zayin, makes it clear that if you use the term Elu, then you're Asur b'chilufehem and Gidulehem. If you use the Lashon of any Toim, then you're not Asur b'chilufehem and Gidulehem. So it makes it clear that Elu is more Chamor than the case of any Toim. So then how could you have a Havamina here to suggest that any Toim would be more Chamor than Elu? It's clear from that Mishnah that that's not the case. So Tosva goes on to explain and says this. He says, you know what? It's the word Elu is not what creates the Isur over there. Very interesting Tosafot. Tosafot says that Elu is not what makes the Davar into a Davar Shel Isur and then makes it into Chilufan and Gidulim Asurim, but rather, the Lashon of Eni Toim takes away from the fact that it is Asur B'Gidulim and Chilufan. When you use the Lashon of She'eni Toim and She'eni Ochel, you're demonstrating that the Isur you want to create here is about your interaction with this item in particular, and not Gidulim and not Chilufan. So Elu is not a more powerful Lashon. It's just the Lashon of Eni Toim and Eni Uchel is a way to take away from Gidulehem and Chilufehem. It's saying, I don't want those to be Asur. I only want Ti'ima or Achila to be Asur. And that's why it works over there. Therefore, the Tosafot says over here, where that is compatible, when you say She'eni Toim and She'eni Uchel, then Yotzei Mehen could be a derivative. That could be a part of that. That think that's Yotzei could be included under any Toim and any Ochel because it's a derivative of the object itself. And therefore maybe any Ochel and Yotzei is not inconsistent with the Yotzei Mehen. And maybe Elu has no impact because as the Tosafot says, Elu has no bearing. The Tosafot answers the question in that way. The Ran actually answers the question by saying that Elu does do something over there. Elu over there makes it into like Hekdesh. And similar to Hekdesh where Gidulehem and Chilufehem are Surin, so too will be the case by Isur Neder. Over here, we're not discussing about Hekdesh. Yotzei Mehen is not an issue of Hekdesh. It's a different question altogether. It's a question of whether once you have something that derives or comes out of the Isur, is that still considered to be the Isur itself? That's not an issue of Hekdesh. That's an issue that is particular to Nederim. And over here, the Lashon of Elu or She'eni Toim might have different impact or different meaning. So that's how Tosafot and the Ran deal with this issue where it's clear in the Mishnah later on that Elu works better than She'eni Toim. Why over here is the Gemara of Ahava meaning that She'eni Toim should work? And they do it by either, Tosafot does this by neutralizing Elu and saying that doesn't do it. She'eni Toim, She'eni Echel that does that in that next Mishnah. And over here, that's not incompatible with the explanation of a Yotzei Mehen. The Ran, on the other hand, says that the Elu over there works particularly because it makes it like Hekdesh. And that's why it works over there. But over here, where Hekdesh doesn't make a difference, then maybe Mehen Tolem works, it works better over here. The Ran here does bring another approach to why these Lishonot over here make a difference, is because they are unnecessary Lishonot. And the unnecessary Lashon is what creates the additional Isur. So when you say Elu, Elu adds on a dimension or an extra factor that makes the Masur, makes it into a Chatichah Shel Isura. And the same is true, he says, B'She'eni Toeim. Because She'eni Toeim is not necessary. If you say Basar Zeh Alai, you don't have to say She'eni Toeim. Or Basar Alai, Konam Basar Alai, you don't have to add on She'eni Toeim. The unnecessary language of She'eni Toeim that's added on, that's what makes it that the Isur here extends not only to the object, but to Beyotzimahen, things that exit from it. Now, Ron says that works well for She'eni Toeim. What are you going to say about She'eni Ochel? Because it would not be enough to say Perut Elu and not say She'eni Ochel, because if you don't specify She'eni Ochel, then there are Asur B'Hana'a as well. So She'eni Ochel does have impact, and therefore it's necessary language. So how can you call it She'eni Ochel extraneous language? And even though Tosafot on the Amud Aleph says that She'eni Ochel and She'eni Toeim are synonymous in this case, and they have the same impact, how can you say She'eni Ochel has that same impact if you believe the reason behind why these things create an Isur Chepza and Piyotze Behen is because of the extra language? She'eni Ochel is not an extra language. So the Ran says, Ika Lameymar. Kevin Avimati Lameymar, Konam Perut Ha'ilu Ba'achila Alai. He could have phrased it this way, B'kamar, She'eni Ochel, instead he used this different formulation, Af Yotze Behen Mashma. Since he didn't use the simplest formulation, which is, Konam Perut Ha'ilu Be'achila alai, and he didn't use that, the most straightforward and easy formulation, but rather use this more convoluted formulation of She'eni Ochel, that's why it's considered to be extraneous, and that's why it creates this Isur of Yotzei Mehen. But he says, V'amru l'fizeh, according to that, Shito, if that's the reasoning behind why the Isur is created over here, is this extraneous Lashon, similar to what Tosafot said before, then there actually will be a difference between Nidarim and Shvuot. You can't use the terminology of achila alai, which is a lashon neder. It doesn't work by lashon shvua. Then al korche, he has to say she'eni ochel by lashon shvua. There's only one way to formulate it by a shvua. There's only one way to formulate it, then there would not be such a distinction. And therefore, when you use she'eni ochel by a shvua, it would not create an iser of yotzei mehen, as opposed to by nidarim, where it would, because there it's an extraneous language. And then the Ran brings that the Rambam does not make this distinction between Neder and Shvuah, and therefore he must believe that it's not because of the Turah, the extra language here that's creating the Isur of Kiyotze Behen, but rather they fundamentally, these words or this type of language means Kiyotze Behen, means things that derive from them. And that's the question of the Gemara. The Gemara here is asking about not whether this is considered to be extraneous language, but fundamentally, do these words or this vocabulary, does it include Kiyotze Behen? So the first proof we brought, we dismissed. Now, Tashma, let's say the second half of that Mishnah on Nun Zayin. She'eni Ochel, She'eni Toeim, Mutar B'chilufen B'gidulein. There you're Mutar. Ha, Yotzei Mehen Asur. You would infer from that that Yotzei Mehen is Asur. So from that, you would conclude that when you use any Toeim, any Ochel, it does create an Isur for Yotzei Mehen, and it would be Dafka by any Ochel and any Toeim. I says, no. I did the lo nasib b'reisha Yotzei Mehen, lo nasib nami b'seifa Yotzei Mehen. Since in the Reisha, it didn't introduce the issue of Yotzei Mehen, it also left it out in the Seifa. And in Ochanami, the Seifa would be Mutar by Yotzei Mehen, and the Reisha would be Asur. Or you can do it either way. Meaning that you could explain it either way. And the Gemara is Duche here, the possibility of getting any proof from that Mishnah, since we have a Dchiyah to both aspects of the Mishnah, both the first half of the Mishnah, because there's a greater Chiddush in putting down Chilufehen, and the latter half because of the parallel structure that there is no need to put in Yotzei Mehen, even though there might have been a bigger chiddush, and there really is a chiddush by saying over here, Yotzei Mehen is Asur, or Mutar, it would have had an impact over there. Tashma. So another option is, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Masev Asar Rabbi Tarfon Alai Bitzim Shnit Bashlu Imo. There are Mishnah that says that Rabbi Yehuda claims that Rabbi Tarfon was Oser, the case where the eggs were cooked together with the meat, the eggs were Asur to them. So Amrulo, the Chachamim responded to Rabbi Yehuda that, Kena davar, you're right, but ematai, when is that true? Bizman shamar basar ze alai. Shnoder mina davar v'nitarev b'acher v'yish v'nutin tamar ze asur. So now, basar ze alai Basar Zeh, all the Rishonim over here, you can see it in Rashi, you can see it in the Rosh, you can see it in Tosafot. Basar Zeh is the equivalent of Elu, because it specifies, it delineates the particular item. So here he says, Basar Zeh Alai, and we don't see Sheini Toim. I don't see any Sheini Toim. And what does our Mishnah say? That the Beit Zah is a sore, because it has the Tam of the Basar. So the Gemara says, Be'elu lo kami bailan, the dafkuhu, enochanami. By Elu, everybody agrees that Elu works to make it that Yotzei Behen is Asur. That we don't have any question about based on our Mishnah that says Basar Zeh works, then certainly Basar Elu or Anavim Elu, Zeitim Elu would work. Kikami Bailan, Bish'eni Toeim, Dafko, Lav Dafko. Our question is Enu Toeim, Dafko or not Dafko? Again, that could mean by itself. Is it Dafko or Lo Dafko? Or according to those Mishonim that suggest that you need both of them, then do you need the Enu Toeim together here with the Basar Zeh? Or together with the Anavim and Zeitim Elu, or is it enough by the Elu by itself? Tashma. Let's look at our Mishnah, the previous Mishnah from yesterday's daf. Dag, Dagim, She'eni Toim, Asur Ben, Ben Gdolim, Ben Ktanim, Ben Chaim, Ben Mibushalim, Umutar, Bitarit, Trufa, Ubitzir. So when you say Dag, Dagim, again, we discussed yesterday why that works, but if you said She'eni Toim, you only use Eni Toim over here. Now he's Asur, whether they're big, small, raw, cooked, but he's mutar in tarit trufa, he's mutar in the minced fish, but more importantly, bitzir, the brine. The brine is a derivative. It's something that's yotzeim in the fish, and you're mutar in the brine. So you see over there, you're using a lashon of she'eni toim, and you are mutar in yotzeimen. That should answer our question. Amarova, that's not the case, because that Mishnah is the case, bekvar yatsa mehen, if the brine already exited from the fish. So if the brine exited the fish prior to your neder, then the brine is not a sur when you're oser the fish, because brine is not considered to be dag dagim. On the other hand, if the brine is still in the fish when you take the neder, enochanami, it would be the case that if the liquid emits from that fish, that would be a derivative of yotzei mehen, and it would be considered to be a sur. So we did not solve the problem with regards at least to eni toim. And Gemara says, Elu, yes. And then by any toim, any ochel, it doesn't know, and it leaves it unresolved, and since it leaves it unresolved, we'll go the chumrah. And the Ran says, the inyan alocha, pshitolan, the elu zafkahu, the asur beyotzimhen, bish any toim is fekalan. That if you say elu ze, then for sure they are asur beyotzimhen. Any toim, we have a safek. Kevin don't leave shita, since we don't have a psak alocha, mashma, the naktin and the chumrah. Then we go the chumrah. Okay, we're going to stop over here by the Mishnah on the top of Nun Gimel Amud Aleph.